da 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 da. Welcome to the Design System Office Hours podcast. That's the old-timey NBA on NBC jingle.
I feel energized. That is that was an invigorating jingle.
Feel good. Yeah, we're recording this on I believe it's a Wednesday, June 1st already. Yeah, almost through one half of the year.
Bonkers, man. It's funny. Funny that it's June 1st. So we have all these open PRs, and today all the tests started failing. I'm like, what the hell's going on? So our date picker component, the visual diffs, were all failing. Well, it's because we set up the visual diff in May and it turned June. And so obviously it visually changed. And so all of our tests failed, which was just hilarious. Just the weird stuff that happens in software.
You have the design system Y2K problem.
Totally. Everything's failed. Gestalt is down forever. It's over. It was fun. Thanks.
But that means it worked. It fails because it worked as intended. So good for you.
Yeah. 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 It was a feature. It was a feature, not a bug, except now all of our integration tests are failing.
I love that every podcast we find out new topics for the next podcast. So measurement, I think, and diffs and regression testing would be a good one, you know, for us to touch on.
Totally.
Today, let's talk a little bit about adoption. This was one of the topics that we had written down to talk about when we first started this 10 young episodes ago. Mm-hmm. And we talked a bit about this when we were going through the mandates episode. And memory refresher, at Disney Streaming, the adoption was, I would say, 90% from the Disney Plus, Star Plus point of view. On Hulu, that was, I think, a very high number. I don't have that because I didn't get to work on that as long. But all of the designers were utilizing the system. In terms of the when you sort of break down the metrics in terms of like detachments and breaking of components, I think that's a different story. But we, designers would start with the system, and we would encourage using this and really try to meet them when they were in the discovery process. And that worked for supporting of this team of, I would say, 60 designers. And back then we talked about the mandate and the mandate from our VP that everything is based on design system components and the work that we've done. And from an engineering point of view, that was also the assumption that everything needs to start at least from an atomic level utilizing our design tokens, from a component level using as much as we can. And then we got to seeing how you were doing it at Pinterest, and it was a different story, right?
Yeah, I think you know, every journey is a little different. We don't have a 90% adoption rate. I can say that. And it's just due to a different level of maturity of the system and a different way of working for a long time. And so a lot of our work as a design systems team has been to try to get our system to a place to where we can reasonably expect adoption. And so that's been a lot of our work, and we're seeing the results now, but it's, you know, it's taken some serious time. If we just would have taken adoption head on, we wouldn't have really been setting up designers or engineers for success. So we had to get our house in order so that adoption was a reasonable ask for our peers.
I think the nuance of this is adoption, and it can be easy or hard depending on when you choose to tackle it in your design system journey. So we decided when I was at Disney Streaming to focus a lot on adoption and community, but other facets of the design system, like the system overall, we weren't able to get to quite as well, like documentation, for instance. So it's really like if you're looking at pulling on different levers, we were able to get good adoption because that was where we were really leveraging our tie, but then the documentation, you know, in that case suffered a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. The challenge that we ran up against is, given the size of our team, without having a centralized and institutionalized knowledge base, boy, that was super enterprisey talk right there. Without documentation, that's a better way of saying it. Without documentation, we didn't feel confident that we could meet all the needs of every team that was shipping product without just getting best practices on virtual paper, that if we weren't available, or if, you know, one person had developed guidelines and they weren't there, that we still had some representation as to how to adopt the system. And so there are pluses and minuses to both, but what we just didn't want to light people's hair on fire without the resources and infrastructure necessary to make it happen sustainably. Again, this is just for Pinterest. Was it the ideal approach? Who knows? Because we tried that approach. Like, it could have been, who knows? It could have been better if we would have done it the other way. But that was the approach that we took based off of what we understood at the time.
The scale thing is a fun thing to talk about. And especially, so formerly being Dizzy Streaming up until about a month ago, and now being at Meta working on Geodesic, our business science system, the scale of the issues became a bit more challenging. So going from a set of designers that fluctuated between, 60-ish to now some number that no one knows the true number of how many people utilize the system. It's a number over 400. If I were to go into a channel that's one of our main support channels, there's over 1,000 people in there, but that includes both engineering customers and design customers. So I just found a good tweet that is from Superfriendly, Dan Moll's company, about how the flip side of high adoption on design systems equals higher maintenance, which is a good problem. And I would used to say that that's a good problem, and that's something for us to work towards at Disney, because our team was like a 3-to-1 design system practitioner to product designer ratio. Here, it's a little bit trickier, and just going through office hours or going through our support channels, it's a lot of support that is needed. There is a lot of interest in adopting patterns, but there's also some gaps, and we found that through just looking at the support tickets or looking through like our sustainability surveys.
Yeah, that's the thing about good problems. They're still problems, right? Like, they don't stop being problems even if they're good. And that's the thing that we were concerned about, is if we didn't have a solid base to work from. I say that in the past tense, like it's a past problem. We're still working through it, right? If we don't build that strong foundation, then how can we reasonably support something that isn't ready for prime time? And so therein is the rub that we are considering, is, come and use our thing. Well, what thing? Well, this thing that's kind of done, like it can erode support. And you only get so much support and so many swings before people decide that you're full of it. And so that's the huge challenge, is how hard do you want to press that button if things aren't ready to rock? And how ready do you have to be? I mean, these are all rhetorical questions. I don't think there's a perfect answer. But if you don't have the people in place to actually support that adoption, as painful as it may be, it may make sense to hold off until you are ready.
Yeah, going back to how we've historically collected feedback, doing the surveys, you had mentioned, before we had started, that Pinterest does surveys every half. At Disney, we've done surveys annually. In terms of some of the adoption issues and designer complaints is what I said, gripes or
opportunities.
Yeah, the opportunities, good problems, as they say on The Wire. But what are some of the good problems that you've seen that designers have expressed?
Well, I think the good problems is that a lot of the things that they're saying, hey, we need this, are the things we want. We already had planned to do. But you can only say that so many times before people get sick of hearing, yeah, we're going to do that. We just haven't gotten there yet. At some point, you just get sick of hearing it's coming. And so it's good to know that you have at least a decent pulse of what the team wants, but it's not so great that you can't meet those needs as timely as you'd like. But we have seen some I am totally jinxing this. So we're right in the middle of our H1 survey, and I need to find some wood to knock on or something. But we've seen so far, unless this survey goes completely sideways, we've seen some pretty significant gains, which we, you know, semi suggested would happen based off of the work that we've been doing. And so far, so good. And additionally, we've seen some really great open feedback about, hey, it would be great if you did this. It'd be great if you did that. We say it and we absolutely mean it, that these points of feedback are taken directly for a reprioritization in the second half of the year to A, obviously meet designers' needs, obviously, but B, also try to like chip away at the, like, you keep saying it's going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. Right. We're trying to take those things and act on them to try to show, hey, if you give us feedback, we're going to act on it. So it's a super critical touch point for our team. And it makes a huge impact on what we work on every single year.
It's an easy quant study too. If you see that, you know, obviously if one person comes to office hours and says, oh, I need a variant of this price component put in a card, for instance. And then 6 weeks later, you see that happen again, then you would like to consider, oh, maybe this is something that bubbles up to be an official design system component versus just a local component that is used for an experiment or what have you. I would love to get better metrics on the types of components that we do spend time on. The Figma method to look at things is really just how many times a component is used. I would love to see, yeah, how many times in the code base it's, you know, used as well. Like I think there's other mechanisms to really try to drive more effort and more resources into building out like something that is more flexible to support more use cases, and in turn, hopefully increasing adoption.
Yeah, I think the challenge there is that, and I love me some metrics as much as anyone, right? But they only tell you so much. So you see a number go up, you have no idea whether it's being used correctly, if it's following guidelines, all the things that can't be as easily quantitatively measured, I think are just as important. And so I always try to put an asterisk behind these numbers and say, this is only painting a part of the picture, but, you know, we just can't work on having a number going up. We got to make sure that the way people use the system is in line with our standards, with our guidelines, with best practices, and that is a difficult thing to measure quantitatively, as I just mentioned. So we have so many metrics and I talk about them all the time, but I also want to try to have the team and the org spend more time having conversations around, are we using them correctly? Are they following our best practices? And then are those best practices leading to better product outcomes? Because I think ultimately that's what you're shooting for, not just rampant usage, willy-nilly usage, but usage that's moving the product forward and bring some continuity throughout the product.
And this goes into a contribution model, which I don't think that we actually covered as an episode, but yet another.
Another one. Put a pin in it.
Another one. Put a pin in it. Yeah, as you probably say all the time on a daily basis at Pinterest, put a pin in it.
Every day. We have to say it in every single meeting.
Yeah, I think the beautiful part of adoption and the sell to a designer is if you improve this pattern and you would like to improve this and then talk to other design partners that may utilize this, you could really affect something that touches multiple different parts of the product. And I think that's the, from a IC point of view, I see that as a big win. And I also see that as a big reach towards working with others on other product teams.
Yeah. I think the rub there though, right, is that sometimes one team's changes. So you change a component based off of, you know, collaborating with the team. And then that change has asymmetric impact, meaning one team benefits and another team doesn't benefit. What do you do now? I think that therein lies the rub. You know, how do you play a mediator or facilitator? How do you judge winners and losers? That's a gnarly topic that I don't have any answers for, but it's something we're constantly trying to figure out. You know, if a change has a metric win for a team, that's great, but how is that going to impact the product as a whole? And when does it make sense and when does it not make sense? And I don't think there's a one size fits all answer for those sorts of things, but you know, it's never fun to be, you know, given a solution that performs worse for your specific feature. Right? No one likes that. It's like the opposite of Christmas. And then how do you try to make that case for teams? I think that's when the rubber really starts to hit the road. When you're asking teams to potentially take a hit for the benefit of the larger product.
So just taking a look without going into, you know, too much detail onto survey responses, some common ones that I've seen in terms of adoption is feedback from designers that the system itself, and I think when they mean the system, they mean either, you know, documentation or the libraries themselves, are hard to use. I cannot find what I need. So that may mean I can't find this thing in the library, or I can't, it's not meeting me where I need to be at the right time and place. That could be like a searchability issue. The system is hard to use, and that could mean various things, terms of maybe like nomenclature, information hierarchy. Those are common ones that I've seen. And those are the ones that I would say are good problems, because those are really tangible and easy to fix and workshop with things like card sorting, which we've done. And also this naming, another episode, coming up with more standard naming that may be more design system default, or, you know, practical design system naming versus institutional.
Well, and the tough thing is you're not just naming things for designers, right? You're naming things for engineers. And what if the Android team calls it something different than the iOS team, and then there's the web team? Can you come to settle on one name? How does that even work? That's what we're working through right now, is making the case for a universal component name that's platform agnostic. And it's not just about design, it's not just about engineering, it's trying to come to a common ground across all those different partners, which is tough.
Yeah. So how have you solved the if you've gotten this feedback that design system is hard to use?
How? Like, let's dig into this one, right? Like, there's many ways a design system can be hard to use. So I think the first, you know, we've tried to drill into what specifically, you know, common themes are understanding how to use the components within Figma. There's all these new features like auto layout, which, you know, sometimes I feel like you need a PhD to understand how to use, or I'm just incredibly mentally deficient, right? So there's the education of how to leverage existing tools to use the system. That's one. Staying up to date on updates. So one of the things we ask are, you know, there's a lot of questions around communication. Are you aware of updates? How, you know, is it working for you? A lot of our comms have changed based off feedback from designers. documentation has been something we've been indexing on a lot, because that's the thing that we feel like we can sustainably use to provide clarity and make the systems easier to use on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to just having one person furiously typing in Slack all day. And so it's a lot of it's just getting into the details about what is hard, what about the system is hard, and then just taking a solution-minded approach. I think I have observed frustration from folks like, why can't they just use the system, or why can't they just listen to us, or these hypothetical frustrations. And I think if you look at it like that, it's going to be really easy to get frustrated and take an adversarial approach. But if you look at it, like any other product where you're just trying to get people to use the thing, I worked on plenty of commercial products, and never have my peers said, why won't our customers just use our product? Right? Like you got to figure out how to solve the problem. That's what you're there for. So trying to take just a solution-minded approach of, it doesn't matter what you think should happen. This is what's happening, and how can we change it? And prioritize the most critical things that you can control and fix it.
Documentation is a great approach. So documentation may be your front door, right? So maybe your front door both for all three of the, quite frankly, all three of the partners, product, design, and engineering. We're always going to hear a little bit about designers that don't want to go to the documentation. So then, like we've talked about on previous podcasts as well, then how do we bring the documentation inside the tool?
Or like change the format. So that's another thing that we're toying with, not going to get into too many details, but can we augment written documentation with other resources to, again, meet people where they are? At the end of the day, there's going to need to be some written documentation, just because written documentation works, right? And like sometimes you just need to read words. But if we don't make it a, Encyclopedia Britannica, and we augment what doesn't need to be written into something that's a little bit more actionable, as long as we're trying to meet people halfway, we're hopeful that, they'll meet us the other half. And we've seen it. We've seen usage increase. We've seen frequency of accessing our docs increase. And these are all great indicators. But what we don't want to do is say, we're getting this feedback that documentation can be it can be a difficult barrier of entry, but people are doing it, so whatever. What we're trying to do is still be acknowledge that it isn't the ideal way to always learn about the system, and try to improve and augment and, again, meet them in the middle so that we have a sustainable solution, but we're also doing everything in our power to make the experience of using our system enjoyable and worthwhile.
Yeah, this conversation is so different than how this might have been if we talked about this 3 years ago when we were co-located in the same office. So the hard to use design system is hard to use was really targeted towards sketch and abstract. That's what I truly believe in. And it's two gating factors of that is the permissions. And we still deal with that in Figma, obviously, with the, limiting edit permissions to design system team members only. That is a little bit of a, dicey conversation. I think for the most part, people are okay with that because they could still pull and utilize your components via view access. But what we were dealing with was using Abstract, which is a version control tool. Great thing. And branching in Figma does a lot of the same similar things.
Wait, hold on. Did you just say that was a great thing? Just for everyone.
Version control is a great thing, but for the large majority of designers, it's not something that is common and like a part of their day-to-day.
Yeah. Just for context, not naming names, but one of the people on this podcast, not named Davey, thought up the idea of using Abstract. And then another person on this podcast, not named PJ, was not happy at all. And understandably so. It was a choppy experience at times. So it makes me laugh to hear you say that, because of the woes that you live through due to the pain I inflicted, or a person on this podcast not named Davey inflicted.
Well, version control is a common thing. You know, it's very rational, it's reasonable. But if designers aren't used to working in that fashion, and they have a different mental model of how they would like to work, it's really a hard thing to shift. And even branching in Figma, I haven't seen large adoption on there either. So moving to Figma, I think, did cut out a lot of the hard to use feedback. But then there's other things like access to libraries, or searching for components, or the easiest one really to solve, other than, you know, nomenclature itself, is things that are missing. So that we get a lot of feedback in, you know, both teams that I've worked on, that there's just components or patterns that are not fully documented or not built in Figma. So
yeah,
I would say that's a good problem. That's an easy one, because that shows interest in utilizing the system, that shows interest in utilizing specific components. And the more signal that we get for designers that want to utilize and iterate on this, we could go and workshop with them and build this new version of this Figma component that we'll get engineering to build, and it's reusable for everybody. So
that is probably one of the big habits that we've been hearing, is that, you know, designers understand, I get it. They want Figma to be their source of truth. And the thing that this is an example of where you accept the feedback and then not necessarily act explicitly on it, and try to make the case for why we're intentionally not doing that, or trying to, again, meet in the middle, mainly because the beauty of the web is that it is a common destination for anyone. And what we're trying to do is create a common language for everyone, right? It's not just for designers. It's not just for engineers. It's for everyone, product, management, everyone, right? And so if we have this information locked in a specific tool that only one team accesses, you're limiting how aligned these groups are. And so I think that's a case where we see it less as like, we need to act on this feedback, and more about, hey, we have to really explain the case for why we are moving in this direction, and try to win people over that, hey, you know, this may not be the ideal solution for you, but we believe that it's the best net solution for everyone. And that ultimately is going to benefit you, because if engineering knows how to use the system as well as you do, it's going to make your job easier at the end of the day.
A lot of this seems like listening, right? Listening, understanding different use cases, different business use cases for the problem that you're trying to solve. And then also trying to build in more flexibility.
Yeah.
To scale this. So that's the beauty of this. And office hours has been great for this. Workshopping and working with designers across multiple teams has been a great thing. I think that's more common now that I'm at Meta. I see more workshops across team, which really does drive the impact of, if you design this component that is utilized by multiple design or product teams, that's pretty big deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's baby steps.
Yeah. The thing that I've been trying to wrap my head around, that I'll be sending out a survey soon to understand, is where is the design system front door for designers? Is that documentation, or is that Figma?
I'm really interested to hear where you land on that. And yeah, I think it's always interesting to hear how folks try to crack this nut at different companies.
Yeah. This is a good one. We're over 30 minutes. So thank you so much, PJ.
Thank you. I'm not
rolling your eyes at me, poking your eye.
I got something in my eye. I'm not rolling my eyes at you. Oh man. If I rolled my eyes, you'd know. You'd hear it from across, how far away are we? You're in, Yeah. You'd hear it. I'd roll my eyes so hard you hear it.
Have a good one. Thank you.
Have a good day.